Yeah.
I have Regina Eagle on line one.
I'm blogging right now. I'll take a message. Yep.
Bill, I have Steve Humble on for you.
Oh, great. Put him through. Steve, can you, I am busy blogging right now. I think it's pretty obvious, Jim, so if you just hold all my calls. Yeah, Jim.
I have Diane checking on the line.
Keep her on hold. I'm just finishing up blogging, and I'll probably, you know what, go ahead, put her through.
Did you say blogging?
I'm like knee deep with blogging. Yeah.
Bill, I have John Partillo from Time Warner.
You know, Jim, I'm like blogging. I can't talk right now. Can you just hold on my calls? I have been blogging the out of my morning. Have you guys been blogging? Yeah.
I have Donnie Deutsch on the
line. Tell Donnie I'm blogging and I'll call him back. Are you blogging?
Yeah.
No, I'm blogging. It's awesome. Yeah, I've been blogging all morning. Listen, I gotta run. I'll talk to you later. You should be blogging. The blogosphere is hot.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 65. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me on this New Year's episode is Mr. John Nicholson. John, Happy New Year's, buddy.
Happy New Year's to you, Pete.
That was a pretty late response, man. What happened?
I was trying to find the mute.
Happy New Year, buddy. Off to a good start.
Yep. It's going to be my year. I'm going to lose 1,000 pounds. I'm going to, kick every bad habit. I'm going to blog 8 times a day. It's going to be a good year.
8 times a day. That's fantastic. Wow. I also have a couple of resolutions. I want to get in better shape, better shape. I need to get in shape and then we'll focus on better. All those good things, right? Go to the gym, eat less, all that good stuff. But yes, I want to blog more. I think a lot of folks are saying the same thing. I've heard a lot of people talking about wanting to blog more. And I figured, hey, what a good way to kick off the new year. We'll bring in the number one blogger of the top V blogs of 2017 and chat about it. So with that, coming to the podcast for, I think, his second or third time, Mr. William Lamb. William, welcome back, buddy.
Hey, thanks, guys. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year's to you, my friend. Good break. You're all rested up and ready to kick it?
Yeah, no, it was a good time off, much needed time off with the family. Ready to come back and start an awesome 2018.
Yeah, I'm already being shown up by you because I think you've already gotten like 2 blogs out for the new year.
Just a couple here and there.
Awesome. Yeah, I don't know how you do it, but I thought that's the whole point, right? I want to get better at blogging. I want to pick your brain. This episode is obviously for all the listeners, but most importantly, it's for me, man. I need to figure this out. I need to figure out what you're doing. So we pulled.
Don't sleep.
Don't sleep.
The magic, the secret here is that, there's this whole 12 hours that if you don't sleep, it's like all this extra time that you can do some work.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, yeah, let's start by just walking through. I read this blog recently, that the 16 top tips for blogging experts for beginners. And I thought, there were some interesting ones on there that were relevant to blogging in IT. So I wanted to share a couple of those with you and get your input on those, but also maybe chat with you on as we read through these, maybe you can share some commentary on whether or not you agree with that, how you do it, and maybe some thoughts you might have on that. John, what do you think? Good idea?
This is a great idea.
All right, let's do it. By the way, you already published your first blog post of the year, didn't you?
Yeah, I've put out a couple recent. I did one on the VCN Support Insight, covered that, just some of the new storage improvements. I also did one that was a little kind of, I guess, slightly different focus, talking about evaluating job offers, what you need to know before you look at taking another job or changing companies.
Awesome. Yeah, you did a really good job on that one. I think that was a really, really helpful blog post. I will leave links to that and any other blog post that we mentioned on this podcast on the show notes of this page. And you can find that on vspeakingpodcast.com. All right, so we're talking blogging tips. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I got some of these tips from a blog post entitled 16 Top Tips from Blogging Experts for Beginners, and that's by Belle Beth Cooper. Excellent blog post. But I also asked some of the V experts on the V Expert Slack channel and some of the more frequent bloggers in this community, what would be their tip for someone who's starting to blog? So we'll start with this first one here. Get ideas from your audience. This can be a great way to gather ideas of what topics people would most like to read about, which will help your blog grow. And then also it says, one of the best ways that I've seen this in action is through blog comments or tweets. Is that something that you guys take advantage of?
Oh, absolutely. I actually do it all the time. In fact, I've seen, you know, a number of bloggers do this really successfully and really well. Take Twitter, for example. There's a lot of great discussions that happens on there, but it's a point in time snapshot of a conversation.
Yeah.
And sometimes the discussions are somewhat open-ended. There's not really a right answer, right? You know, general best practices, you know, what do you do for server upgrades, all this kind of good stuff. And I've seen folks like Duncan who've taken some of this discussion and pull it into a blog article and either put it together so that, you know, it can be found again, which is a really useful thing just for people who want to search for content. But he's also kind of creating additional engagement with his audience and other audiences where they come back in and provide their perspective. And so this kind of ongoing commenting allows for that article to kind of live beyond just the, you know, point in time knowledge content that you might see on a general basis is one good example that I've seen. Other examples are like guys like Luke, even myself or Alan, who've done this in the past, where we used to be very active on the communities. I think Luke's probably the only one that's super active still on the VMTM community forums. And oftentimes he'll be solving problems, some of which are pretty unique. Some of them that might be really common questions that he sees over and over again. And for somebody who produces content, you know, a great way to help scale out your message or help the community is putting together things like blogs and scripts that a lot more people can kind of find and access. And so oftentimes the VM team community has a great place to pull information from, a great place to pull content for things that may not have been discussed before, for unique content. And then kind of lastly, if you are an active blogger or other channels of communication like email, internally for us, it'd be like Socialcast or Slack, that's another great place where you'll get questions. And there may be things that you might find that's never been talked about before, or maybe explained in the depth that you would like it to be, or maybe you've solved a particular problem and you want to share that back with the community. It's a great place to kind of get ideas to kind of get going if you're trying to get started, or you're kind of stuck and say, hey, I have nothing to blog about.
Pete, one thing I do just to keep track of blog ideas is a lot of times I'll think of a blog idea just really quickly and it'll be like, oh, this is a really cool idea. I could talk about this and this and this. And then I'd forget about it. And so I send myself an email and actually have a subject line that auto filters into a folder called blog ideas. And so if I've got a couple seconds for, you know, to sit down and write a blog, I'll go look in that folder and pick out an idea. That way I can make sure, you know, I keep track of those clever little, oh, this is really neat. This is something that should be a blog post.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's the thing. Like, I have several ideas for blog posts and then I put them in my OneNote. I have a tab for my blogs, like, you know, blog ideas, but it's getting them from the ideas into the actual blogs that I think I have the biggest problem with. You seem to be pretty good on cadence, William. What's the trick there?
I actually have the same problem too. I have a lot of ideas in my head and I actually use OneNote as well. It used to be Evernote. So I think that's a great suggestion from John is, you know, if you have an idea, just jot it down. A lot of times, you know, I'll be talking to a customer, questioning somebody from the field, and something would jog my mind. So I'll just type it out. It might be one word, it could be a couple of sentences, and just kind of storing that for future references in the later where you have some spare time, you want to do some investigation. But it is kind of tricky to go from that idea to the end state. And I think what people don't realize is just the amount of work that goes into kind of putting these things together. What you guys see is this kind of constant output. But in reality, I have articles that's in all different phases. A lot of times they're done, but I just don't feel like it's ready or the content, you know, doesn't feel right. And so I have a lot of work in progress. So I think to help with one of your earlier points, and I see this question all the time, is sort of, you know, how do you get this content out there? And it's not something that you need to sit down and say, okay, here's this article, I'm gonna write it, bang it out in 12 hours or whatever and publish it. A lot of the stuff that I do, it's actually over weeks and sometimes even months where I'll write a little bit. The way that I work out blog articles, it might be a little weird. I actually cannot write or do research until I come up with like the title of the blog article. You know, I'll do some research in advance of sort of like, I know what I want to do. But in terms of actually writing the article, I just get stuck if I cannot figure out the title.
Ah.
and that for me is like, yeah, it's weird. But And I'll have a lot of these in flights and I'll put them in draft mode, right? So I'll start writing a little bit. You know, it sounds good. I'll start typing it out. And maybe I'll be busy with something else and I'll come back to it. So a lot of this stuff is just doing a little bit at a time. Just like learning automation in a scripting language, if you're trying to learn a new language, for example, do a little bit at a time, right? What you see is the output, but what you don't really see is sort of the process behind it. And a recommendation is, especially if you're just getting started or you want to get into a much more continuing cadence, is, you know, allocate an hour or two each week. Or at the end of the week is a great time, especially Fridays, right? Where you've already had a really long week. And this might be something to kind of get your mind off something, especially if you're working on a topic that's not really related to work per se. And just give yourself an hour and just say, okay, get as much done as you can in that hour and then come back to it the following week. And then the more of that really helps you put together content in such a way that you can start publishing on a much more frequent cadence.
That's a really great idea. Actually, put it on your calendar to start blog. You will blog between this hour and this hour. And yeah, then on a Friday or something like that. And then you know you're going to do it. That's a great idea. You said headlines, which brings me to one of the other tips that I saw online, which was write catchy headlines. No matter how great your content is, it won't matter unless you have an amazing headline. People have a split second to decide if they should click on your post, and your headline will make them decide. The headline is also essential in making it easy and desirable for people to share your post. Keep your headline simple, powerful, useful, and bold. And on the blog post, and I'll share this on the show notes, but the guy gives an example of he tweeted one title for the blog post, and then he tweeted another different title for the same blog post, and then he showed the analytics. And, you know, there was one title that just didn't seem to, wasn't catchy, wasn't powerful, but it was the exact same content, whereas the other one got like, you know, 300% more downloads than the original, just because of a different headline.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I think it's one of those things. It depends. I think in general, that's a true statement. For me personally, I think having a clear headline allows for great searchability. So ensuring that the different search engines can look up particular keywords that you want to emphasize on your particular article. In terms of catchy article names and all that, there's a balance, I guess. Some people do it really, really well. I would say, you know, guys like Chris Wall comes up some great titles, right? But I wouldn't say it's something that you need to force it on, like unless you're writing about a scandal or something like that in Hollywood. Like I think the particular words that you choose for the title should be something that a search engine can easily find the particular yeah. article so that people can find your content. So to me, that's like king. Obviously, you don't want it to be a paragraph long, but have the right keywords. And so that part of, for me, why I spend so much time on the headline is just to make sure that people can find that content, right? Like you said, you can write all this great content, but if the title doesn't really pull you in terms of keywords being searched online, nobody will find it unless they kind of follow in on a regular basis. And a lot of times our content in general for blogging in general is that it's found on natural searches through Google and et cetera and all that, right? So I think focusing on the right keywords and trying not to do kind of the bait clicks. I try not to do that as much as possible. There may be some articles where there may be some controversy. Or you might say, oh yeah, this was never possible. And when you go through the argument, you're like, oh crap, it's actually possible, right? So there are ways that you can play with the titles. And I think this is something that is the creativity of an individual that you can kind of play with it. So I mostly agree that yeah, definitely have a useful title and making sure that you have the right keywords.
There's got to be a ton of information I'm totally missing because I refuse to click on clickbait. I just can't do it. I can't bring myself to click on something that I know they're just trying to trick me into clicking on it. I just can't do it.
Pete, what about these four neat tips that, you know, the man doesn't want you to know to make your data center 1,000 times more efficient? Come on.
I'm on it. Another one is keep it short. Working out the best length for your blog post can be tricky. You generally need about 300 words minimum to get indexed by search engines. But otherwise, the length of your post is up to what you think feels best. Is that something that you consider about, like, length of a post? Now, I know it can be too long. I know some folks, they try to boil the ocean in one blog post. You know, they'll have like chapters and chapters, and it's almost like a technical report. But what about you? What's the right size for a blog post?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think I see this a lot with like new bloggers that just getting started. They have some ideas that's been brewing, and so when they write their first couple of articles, it's like writing a book. It's every single detail. And my feedback on that is that there's no right size. I think you kind of have to judge what is the right content. I to be honest, I haven't looked at my average article sizes, but I'm guessing it's probably in the 500-600 words length. I think there are different types of articles that you can produce, and they do have different outcomes. If you have content that's going to really go really, really deep, good examples like Frank Deneman's types of articles, his titles, my brain is already hurting. I haven't gotten into his content yet, but he does a really good job of expanding and turning into a series, right? That's one type of blogs where you want to go really in depth. How-to article is a really great one. I think NSX, especially NSXT lately, it's been getting a lot more traction. We're seeing a lot more customer adoption of the platform. And it's a relatively new technology. There's only been a couple of releases. So there haven't been that many people actively blogging the topic. So it's a great place to start. And I've seen a couple of that's out there where they're focusing on sort of how to deploy it. But rather than just going through the mundane steps of deploying, they're actually walking through saying, you know, why am I doing these things? How does this differ from, say, like an NSXV based implementation, where you can't really fit all of that in one blog post, and it'd be really hard. And I think most of us, we're going to lose interest, you know, after a couple of paragraphs. And so I think keeping it relatively short so that you keep the attention span, and if you have more content to share, that's great. Turn it into a blog series. You may not know something is going to turn into a blog series, and so they may have different titles, but if you think you have something where it's like, hey, this could last a good month or 2 months, you know, put a part one, part two, and just help people lead onto it, and you can kind of tease up the next topic. And even if you're not sure about the next article that you're wanting to contemplate, this is a great way to get feedback. So you might do a part one,
yeah,
and look at the comments that you get, right? So turning things into blog series is a really great idea. I see that a lot with first-time bloggers where they just want to put everything out there. In terms of different types of blogs, I've also seen is sort of, you know, don't just regurgitate content that's been there. I think everybody has a unique perspective on things. And so I think it's fine to share similar content, but try to, if you're going to do that, try to give your perspective on it, right? If you find an article that somebody has written about already, take that and say, how can I change it up? You know, maybe there's been changes in the software, maybe there's been changes in the best practices. Give your perspective on it. And so it can be about some other person's article. I've seen some articles where all they're doing is just blogging about other people's blog articles, but it was actually really interesting. So there's not really a correct length. Obviously, it could be a little bit too long. And so it's something that you just pick up over time. And it really just depends on the contents, right? And get feedback from the community and look at the comments that you get back, which also helps give you a little bit of guidance on sort of, you know, your follow-up blog post.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was just looking at some of the other notes I had here. Melissa Wright, she works for Veeam now. She won the number one new blogger, I think, last year. And she's always in the top. She's an amazing blogger. She's really awesome IT community member. But she added to this and she said, just do it. The hardest part is getting started. Don't worry if your post is bad or good. Blogging is like a muscle you have to build. It's also fun to go back and read your early blog posts to see how far you've come. But that one kind of struck me too as well when you started talking about early bloggers who are trying to figure out exactly what to do. I think the idea is just get it out there, put it out there, and then read it. And, you know, don't worry about whether or not it's good or bad, because you'll get the feedback and you'll get better and better. But I can tell you that I have suffered from paralysis by perfection, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the other aspect of it too is like there's a lot of people where, you know, they're perfectionists, right? And I've literally talked to folks who've written the article. It looks fantastic. And it's literally saved in the draft state. And they're like, oh, I just need to add this one more piece. And it's a great comment from Melissa. Just publish it out there, right? It's the internet. You can always go back and make edits. You know, I make some typos. I try to make sure I don't have typos, but oftentimes people will catch it. And sometimes just getting the topic out there, especially some of the topics where they're kind of discussion based kind of articles, it's great to kick that off. And it's just, don't save it, just publish it out there, put yourself out there. You won't know till you try it, right? So I think that's a great suggestion for first-time bloggers.
Oh yeah. Similar comment from Water Kirsten, also a V expert in the community. For me, it's have fun doing it, and do it because you want to do it, not because you have to. Also, don't be afraid to fail, but be prepared to correct. That's fair as well. So interesting point is, yeah, just don't be afraid to just put it out there.
Oh yeah, have fun with it. I mean, one of the things I've seen a lot of people do, especially, you know, at the New Year's, like, I'm going to commit myself to write a blog a day, or I'm going to write a blog, you know, every couple of weeks. It's, you know, you should write a blog because you want to share something, not because you're forced to, because it's the last 24 hours and you haven't written a blog since. You'll see that a lot of people who kind of come from that mantra, you'll see that very early on, they stop after a couple of weeks. Right? It's very difficult to write a blog a day and have it be good blog content, to be honest, right? And so have fun with it, share content that you're interested in. You know, when I got started in the early days, it was really sharing some of the problems that I had solved when I was a system admin, or questions that I've seen on the communities where there was not an answer for. I've also seen some great net new bloggers that came out, you know, 2016, 2017, guys like Phelim. There's another gentleman who works over in the NSBU who works in GSS for NSX. And they're sharing a different perspective, right? Some of it might be coming from a support standpoint. The NSX one was actually pretty interesting because they're kind of sharing ways of troubleshooting an NSX-based environment. And it's not something you normally see. And he's been pretty consistent about it. And so kind of bringing in your perspective, your day job of what you're doing. A lot of people are always interested in sort of how do you automate workload deployments? How do I automate the infrastructure? How do I tackle patching? And these things change from year to year, right? There's new technology, there's new techniques, new software. And so these are things where whatever you're doing during your day job, don't just kind of put a wall and then work on something different. You can actually bring some of that into the blog content and share it when appropriately versus saying, oh, I need to write a blog a day because that's going to get me to be a V expert or whatever, right? Like, yeah, do it because you enjoy it, because at some point you're going to say, this is no longer fun, and you're going to stop blogging. And I think for the people who've been doing it for a long time now, not including myself, there's a lot of other people who've been doing it much longer than I have. They do it because they love it. They love sharing information. They love engaging with the community. And these are the same set of folks that you see at VMworlds, you see at VMugs, continually sharing their information. And I think that's really what makes our community so special.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm questioning John's new commitment, his new resolution to do 8 blogs a day, John. I think that's a little, you know.
Okay. Maybe I'll tone it down. But one thing I do find that helps me out is sometimes I'm stressed. I'm like, this blog's not perfect enough. And I'll just hit publish and I won't tell anyone. And then I'll go frantically back over it, because once I know it's out there, I really need to actually go, you know, finish it up and polish it quickly. And I'll sometimes like seed it out to like one or two good friends and be like, hey, can you look this over? Do you have any thoughts? And get it out there, but maybe not do the full Twitter barrage and dump it to Slack channels until I've had a couple people look it over.
Yep. Let's see. Duncan Epping. He's a blogger you may have heard of. He said, figure out first.
He's Swedish, right? Swedish guy.
Yeah.
Never heard of him before.
Yeah, he's wrote a few blogs. Figure out first what it is you would like to talk about. Find a topic that you want to be an expert in, or if you already are an expert in it, and then figure out how to share your knowledge. A blog seems to be what most people do, but these days there are more ways to share knowledge, which may also stand out more, like YouTube videos, ebooks, podcasts. Of course, whatever you feel most comfortable with, do, because you're doing it because you enjoy it. A lot of hard work, effort will go into it. If you don't enjoy the process, then it's very unlikely that you will be able to do it for a longer period of time. So there's a theme here, having fun. Do what you know, have fun with it.
Yeah, and blogging doesn't have to be the exact medium. I think Duncan brings a great point. You know, we've seen a lot of introduction of different mediums to share information on. Podcasting seems to be the more popular one these days, but video is still always an active one. And it just depends on your audience too, right? A lot of people will learn differently. I think there are pros and cons to some of these different mediums, especially around searchability. If you're trying to share really deep technical knowledge, automation, you can do it with video. Podcasts might be a little bit difficult. I've seen it done before. So you may want to figure out sort of the type of audience you're trying to engage on. But yeah, there's more than one type of medium to share. And you can always get feedback. And you might say, hey, you have really great content, but maybe when you tried video, that's something that you really enjoy more. And video is something quick. We all have phone cameras and all that. For 5 minutes, you can shoot a quick video and you're done, right? And so try different ways and see what you like, right? And maybe you want to rotate through these different mediums over time rather than just focusing on one. That's also okay as well, too.
Yeah, coming from someone who does a podcast is not a replacement for a blog. I think they're both very powerful and useful, and I enjoy both. Even videos. I do a lot of videos at VMware. I enjoy doing those, but I don't think there's no replacement for the ability to index and search and get access to blogs. There's just nothing like it. All right, another one is Mr. Anthony Spiteri from Veeam. He's a great VMware blogger. I mean, I've read so many of his blogs just from Googling, and all of a sudden you find yourself on Anthony's page, much like on your page, William. The best content comes from tinkering in home labs or at work, and it's not always the deep dive that, you know, the most technical post that gets the most readership. What about that, John or William? What is your experience in terms of getting the most readership? Is it the most technical one, or is it just something that you, hey, I found this in my lab?
Okay. Sometimes I just find it to be really pragmatic stuff of like, hey, here's this one little command that solves this one issue when you hit this one thing. And you'd be shocked how many times that'll come up in Google. Talking to Spiteri about previous blogs, like one of his most common blogs was how to recover a crashed VCSA. It's a fairly mundane blog with some basic, you know, Linux, Unix commands, but it, you know, stuck out as, you know, being a high volume post for a long time. Just, and it may seem mundane to him or I, but there's a lot of people who may have been in that situation.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree as well. It's not the most technical that'll get you the most readership. To be honest, I think what I generally, the gauge that I've seen or just general blogs in general is just the usefulness of it, right? It's oftentimes it's the little tiny things that you share. You know, you did something in the home lab that solved this particular problem that other people are probably going to run into. That becomes a very popular blog post. I remember last year, and it was actually a surprise to me when I wrote it, which was there was a issue with the vSphere Web Client plugin, primarily due to Adobe Flash, and it basically just stopped working.
Yep.
And we had found a couple of workarounds. You know, internally, I worked with Adobe, but there were also some other folks in the community that had shared some workarounds. And so I kind of just put that together because it just happened to me over the weekend. And I thought I broke something in my environment. And that article started to get tiny updates to it. But that was actually literally the most popular article of 2017, just like hands down. Like when I saw the stats, I was like, what the heck? Like there was nothing new really per se there.
I ran into that same issue, and I remember seeing, your post, and there was a Reddit thread, and it was like some random guy on Reddit, I think, who found some other way to do a workaround. And
right.
Yep. You saved me so much time on that one.
Right. So it's these little things, or, you know, how do I upgrade, you know, an ESXi update if I don't have Vim? It's all these little tiny things. And so I kind of categorize these just as useful articles. They don't have to be long. They don't have to be technical. And sometimes this content is actually in, say, product documentation. It's just that it's so hard to find it. And oftentimes folks will run into this and they'll describe it in the right way. And it gets picked up by Google and indexed properly. And, you know, you go, anytime you run into issues in your lab, whether it's production or in your home environment, the first thing you're gonna do is you're gonna Google it. You're gonna say, hey, here's this message I see. And it's oftentimes those little things that are the most useful, not only for yourself, but because you're sharing it, it's the most useful for other people. And so those tend to be the really popular types of articles that live on, rather than something that you may go super deep in, which set of people might be interested in, but in terms of the larger breadth of folks, they may or may not find it useful for their day-to-day job. So that's another area to kind of focus in terms of topics that you might want to consider writing about.
The context for KBs, those are some of the ones that, here's this issue, here's a KB for it, but here's some context, or here's what it looks like, or here's what you should expect. Adding some extra context for a KB, those are really popular posts in general.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely don't rewrite this exact same KB, but I've seen a number of folks take these KBs and say, here's a particular problem that's described relatively well, but here's some additional context of why you're having this problem, or here's some workarounds. I remember there's a couple of articles I've written in the past where there are some issues, and this KB outlines this 50-step process. And when I look at it, I was like, oh, crap. No, hell no. Like, I'm not going to read all this stuff.
Where's the script? Where's the William Lamb script?
Exactly. So I look at it, it's like, okay, how do I apply this at scale, right? So again, it's taking content that's already there. I didn't create that content. I didn't discover what those commands are, but taking a look at it and say, hey, could I add some additional context to it to help users understand this? Or from my personal perspective, it's like, hey, if I was another admin that looked at this and I have 1,000 hosts that I need to update, like, crap, how am I going to do this? Taking that bundle together as a script and then publishing that and sharing that with the community, you get some engagement there. And so KBs are a great place of information, especially some of the KBs, they don't go very deep. So I think there's an opportunity there, especially if you have some of that background on the topic that you can actually expand upon it or help build some automation tools around it as well.
Yep. I'm going to read these two in a row because they kind of complement each other, and it was kind of funny. So Ed Haletke writes, keep it interesting, write for yourself. Your blog becomes your memory in some ways. Nothing better than searching for a problem and finding you wrote a solution and you reuse your own solution. And then, which I completely agree with. But also Michael Rudloff, another VExpert, responds, and even better if GSS, VMware's global support, sends you your own blog in a ticket as a solution.
It's funny you say that, but it's like it's true, and every single person that's ever done blogging before knows that's true. You know, definitely write for yourself. I do it for myself too. A lot of times where I'll Google something and I was like, oh crap, I actually wrote about this a couple of years back. Here's a solution. You just forget, right? It's just human nature. Yep. So definitely write for yourself. A lot of people use their blog as a way of just basically capturing either their potential career history, but the things that they've done, especially when you're doing like APIs and automation, you just forget, right? And so when somebody's asking a question, it's a great way to respond back, like, here's a blog article, here's all the context. I do that numerous times with emails where I get questions and literally the response is a one-liner and it's the link to the article. I'm not going to even bother expanding upon it, right? And so it's a great place to kind of share information. And again, very useful over time, but I find it very useful to put this stuff down because later on I'll find it or somebody else will find it and say, hey, that was very useful.
William, one of my favorite blog posts you've ever done, and I've referenced this a million times, is how to do a cross vCenter, cross SSO domain vMotion. how to migrate between that. And that's something countless times I've heard people say it can't be done. And then I would point them at your blog and be like, here's actually a script to automate it. But it's been interesting seeing that kind of take a life of its own.
Yeah, that's actually been a pretty fairly popular article for the last several years now. I think I wrote that maybe in 2015, I think. And it was something that many people weren't even aware of. And in fact, when talking to some people internally, they weren't even aware that we had that capability. And what we're talking about here is the ability to perform a cross vCenter vMotion, which we all kind of know was introduced in vSphere 6.0. But one of the things that's not really clear, and we VMware didn't really do a good job of kind of explaining the underlying technology, was that, you know, we enable the feature using the vSphere web client, which creates this kind of artificial limitation where you need to have enhanced linked mode, which means same SSO domain. So everybody kind of assumed like, hey, if I want to do cross vCenter vMotion, same SSO domain, can only do it through the UI. Sure, there's some APIs and that was it. But in reality, we actually created an artificial limitation in the UI because that's just how we perform the operation. It's not a bad thing, right? To be able to get that single pane of glass, we needed a common SSO domain. But the underlying feature never cared about the SSO domain. Like it works regardless of how you configure SSO domain. It works regardless of how you deploy your vCenter. So I can actually migrate a VM live running between an embedded VCSA to a Windows vCenter that has an external SSO. Like none of that really matters. And so when I discovered the capability, I was like, wow, this is like game changer, literally. And so when I wrote about it, I provided a PowerCLI script and it really took a life of its own. This past VMware, I talked to a number of customers who've been able to leverage that script and it really unlocked them because these are customers that are coming from environments that they couldn't upgrade. They couldn't take the downtime. They wanted to migrate to new hardware, consolidate some systems, right? So there's a lot of use cases that this really unlocks. And customers have been successful in migrating 5, 8, 10,000 VMs. These are all production workloads with zero downtime. And it's just something that, like you said, John, I continuously reference it because a lot of people just like, I just did not know about this, especially for customers that are coming from the 5.1, 5.5 environments, you know, just getting familiar with this technology. And it's actually taken a life of its own, as you mentioned. You know, I wrote the script several years back, and then it's been so popular, people have been using the PowerCLI scripts. But customers are saying like, hey, can't we get this, you know, natively from VMware? And so, you know, I worked with Alan and the PowerCLI team, and they actually pulled in that logic into our native move VM commandlet. So in the PowerCLI 6.5 release, I believe, we actually have native cross vCenter vMotion across same SSO domain or different SSO domain all built in. So rather than running my gigantic script, it's literally like three lines of code. And now you can perform this at scale. And we kind of saw the evolution of that. More recently, since you brought this topic up, the script has been great. Automation, a lot of customers use it for those purposes. But there are still a class of customers that want to do it through from a UI. And today, there's really no UI built out there. And then more importantly, how do you do this in terms like a bulk operation? Even with the move VM commandlet, you're migrating individual VMs kind of in a sequential order. And so for customers who want to do data center evacuations or data center consolidation, they want to move everything. And we don't really have a bulk API. And so within the ISBU, which is the business unit that I'm part of, one of the engineers who works on our VMware Cloud Foundation kind of had an idea to say, hey, we'd like to take the content that you've created for your scripts, but could we kind of enhance it further to build this kind of nice UI? So we recently released a Fling. It came out right before Christmas, called the Cross vCenter Migration Utility. And it's a little Java application. It runs on Windows, Mac, or Linux. Super tiny, you know, like less than a meg, I think. You start it up there and it gives you a nice GUI interface where you can basically register n number of different vCenter servers. And then you can then perform the migration using this UI. And it allows for bulk operations. So you can actually select all the VMs. And the UI on the back end is smart enough to basically detect all the source networks. So rather than using the API where you have to map every single network, it'll detect that you have 20 VMs, but all these 20 VMs only use like 5 different networks. Oh, man. So it'll give you that listing below. And then you basically pick the destination networks that you want to map to. So very, very easy to use using the UI. But the primary use case for this really is going to be through automation. So early on, we thought about the automation use case. And so the UI is great for a couple of migrations here and there. But if you really want to do this at scale, we also have a native REST API that's part of the implementation. And I actually even wrote like a nice little PowerCLI module. So we went from using the APIs, point-to-point, sequential, single migration workloads, native PowerCLI commandlets, still, again, single workloads, to this kind of bulk operation. This all built on top of the native vSphere APIs that we've had since vSphere 6.0. We're just providing a completely different experience and hopefully a better experience. And we've gotten a lot of great feedback so far. And so I recently did a blog article on that too. So you can kind of see the evolution of this little project. But if we kind of take it back to the topic that we've been talking about, which is around blogging, oftentimes people are saying, hey, all these topics have already been discussed. I have no new ideas. Or, oh, some people work for vendor X. They have, you know, knowledge in there. You can actually look back at some of the content you've written or other folks and say, how can I evolve some of the content, right? We know that technology, techniques, all these things change over time. And so some techniques that I might have learned earlier, there are better ways. I'll just quickly give you another example. You know, when I was doing some automation around some VMs, you know, I was using something called guest operations. It allows us to basically send commands into the guest. Most recently, a couple of months ago, I discovered this new API that you can actually send keystrokes into a VM. It doesn't rely on tools, which is what guest operation relied on. Hmm. And this to me, like, my mind. Yes, exactly.
Because
you can now, it's this neat little, I mean, VMware and their engineers, they have like so many awesome ideas and they put into the APIs. And sometimes we just don't do a good job of kind of advertising it. And somebody like me who just gets kind of interested in all these little weird things, I look at these APIs and it works at the virtual hardware layer. So it doesn't need tools. And so it's basically OS agnostic, but you can basically send keystrokes in there. So you can imagine if a VM,
WinR,
FSCK, if a VM blue screens, if you need to actually install an OS from scratch, right? You literally have this mechanism. This is a native vSphere API that's, I think we introduced in 6.5. And so it was kind of looking at ways that I can automate, you know, guest operation. And this is kind of a next iteration. So you can always look back at the stuff that you've done and see what has changed. Or are there better things that you've learned over the years in your day-to-day job or in your career and build upon that, right? And so there's a lot of content out there. So when I hear people saying, I have no ideas, it's like, it's everywhere. Just, you know, you should look at what you've created or look at what other people have created and see how you can add your own perspective on there.
Yeah. And that's it, right? That's the whole point. I mean, and, you know, I've got a ton of these. We won't go through all of them. I'm going to leave. There's going to be an entire blog post dedicated to all of these because we've got a lot of great feedback. But what it really has been boiling down to is, yeah, just get out there and do it. But also, like, don't be afraid if it's already been published, right? That's another theme I keep hearing. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. You'll get better at it and you'll get good feedback. And then look what could possibly happen. I mean, you started with a blog post that ultimately turned into software for VMware that's making life easier for everybody. So that's encouraging. I mean, that's what it's all about. Not every blog post is going to turn into that, but that's the evolution. I mean, how many blogs have you written so far, you think, around?
I think I ended the year last year at 911.
Wow. That's a lot of writing. That's awesome. But it's
one
bite at a time, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And who knows? You might be a blogger who might be up on stage with Pat Gelsinger, Mr. Alan Renouf.
Yeah. It has been a long
time. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's yeah, you're not going to perfect it day one. And I think for any of the people who've been doing it for some amount of time, you know, we're still working on it and figuring it out and seeing how we can write our content to tailor to our audience and just have that active engagement. I think that's the biggest piece of feedback I would give is put yourself out there and then engage with the community, give feedback for people who've been doing it for some time. Reach out to those folks and kind of share your ideas. I think, like John mentioned earlier, I've seen a lot of people who've just started where they're not sure. So they'll kind of share their articles out to a couple of folks just to kind of get some eyes on, especially if it's a topic where you may not be 100% confident in on. But in general, really just put yourself out there and start that engagement. Places like Slack and Twitter is a great place to have those discussions. Yeah. And then that's going to, over time, you know, it's a muscle that you're just going to continue building on.
Man. All right. Awesome. Well, look, we're coming up on the hour, so I don't want to take too much of your time, but William, thank you so much for joining the conversation. And for those of you listening, if you're thinking about blogging more or getting started blogging, hopefully these tips have helped. I will leave all of these and more that I didn't even get to on the show notes of the podcast at vspeakingpodcast.com. If you have a tip that has not been mentioned, I'd love to hear it. So email us at podcast@vmware.com and we will also add that to the blog post. And and we look forward to hearing from you. And John, anything else before we let William go?
No, that's it. Let's land this plane.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can get this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A huge thank you to all the V experts and bloggers that shared their information and Mr. William Lamb. We'll see you next week. But until then, bye for now.
I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand
that? Oh, yeah.
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
See?
Listen, I gotta run. I'll talk to you later. You should be blogging. The blogosphere is hot.
And that creates an ongoing discussion. And that kind of, that type of an article is not just knowledge sharing.
But, time out. Sorry. I'm so sorry, but in the middle of your sentence, I started hearing two of you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I still do. Do
you, I only hear one of them.
You only hear one.
Hey, be quiet. Look. Oh, nothing. Just tell my clones to be quiet.
That explains how he gets all the blog content out.
Enough of this jibber jabber.